This month, to finish off the year in 2020, the Andy Zanka Youth News team decided to do something a little different with their show this month. To celebrate the holiday season and try to end the year 2020 on a more helpful note, they've each written stories, some funny, some inspirational, to lighten your hearts of our community in Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. You're listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. I'm Mountain Mays. We'll start things off with Blake. Blake is an avid skier and a friend of mine, since I used to be on the news team myself last year. Before we air this story, we want our community to know that if you ignore a ski boundary within the resort, that violation can result in fines up to $1,150 and loss of skiing privileges. After hearing the story, you will see why Blake has learned his lesson.
This is quite a silly and somewhat unnecessary story of two very dumb children. If you will, it was a series of unfortunate events. I have this friend named Colton, and we've gotten ourselves into quite a bit of unfortunate situations, but this one takes the cake. Now, me and Colton, we were skiing on a really sunny day. It was nice out, even though the snow was particularly crunchy. On this mountain, there's an area that not a lot of people go to. It's called campground. The lift is really slow, so most people aren't patient enough to go down that way. That day, we were ready for an adventure and decided to visit this small pocket of the mountain. We figured there may be some fresh snow still, even during this busy day. It's secluded, so much so that if the lift closed and you're still on the slope, we were told a cat would have to come and get us. That was enough of an incentive to watch the time closely. Now, me and Colton were having an absolute blast. We found some great lines and fun stashes that were practically untouched. As we were coming up the lift for what we thought would be one of our last runs around 3:30, we decided we should go get some lunch before heading home for the day. I reached in my pocket, looking for the $11 my mom gave me earlier. I dug deep down, but I couldn't find it. My money was gone. I look over my shoulder, panicking. My stomach was rumbling, and I couldn't stop thinking about the hot, cheesy pizza waiting for me inside. Colton says he saw something fall out of my pocket near the last lift, somewhere outside the ski area boundary. We would definitely get in trouble if we tried to go back, but I was hungry and determined, so we decided to go look for it. As we went down to scope it out, we discovered the area was now completely roped off. We skied down looking for other options, but didn't see anything. We were determined to make it work. Finally, we ducked under the rope and made it through the trees, but as soon as we got down to the massive drop, Colton took off his skis and I unclipped from my snowboard to climb down. He's a good friend to come on this big recovery mission to find just $11. I jump over and look to see why Colton wasn't following me. Instead, he was searching frantically through the knee-deep snow for his now lost ski. How he managed to lose an entire ski still bewilders me to this day. I should have stayed and helped. I knew that. After all, he was going on this ridiculous, unnecessary adventure with me, even though he could easily have ditched me a while back. But I knew the lift was closing soon, and I still didn't have my money. So after a few seconds of deliberating, I ditched Colton and continued the mission solo. He'll find his way back somehow. Now, on my own, I have to snowboard down the extremely deep powder, cross a 30-foot flat spot that was still extremely deep, and then beeline across the slope and under the lift to where my money was. I start to make my way down the face, trying to keep speed. Then I got to the toughest part, where, in full view of everyone under the lift, I would have to take off my board again and trudge across the flat spot, put it back on, then cross under the lift. I was also extremely nervous since there was tons of patrollers at this time that could have confiscated my pass had they seen me on a restricted section of the mountain. I make my way across and put my snowboard back on. I cut across the slope, looking for a glint of color in the sea of white, untouched powder. I started making cuts through the forbidden area, completely aware that I was in full view of anyone who happened to pass overhead. Miraculously, I did end up seeing a little bit of color in the snow. I was elated. I had found my money, my $11. Pizza was still in my future. I skied over to it, and it was the wrapper from the granola bar I had eaten earlier. At that moment, I realized I was now separated from my friend, the lift was going to close soon, and I wasn't sure how to get back to the ski area boundary. I picked up my trash, as any good Samaritan would do, and stuffed it back into my pocket. If anything came out of this adventure, at least I know I didn't litter. The way back to the ski run wasn't too bad. All I had to do was take off my board multiple times and almost have a full mental breakdown. Eventually, I did make it down to the lift, where I thought Colton would be waiting for me. He wasn't. I waited for another 15 minutes before he finally showed up. He was having problems of his own. Apparently, he couldn't find his ski for a while, and then he looked at me, despite the fact that I had left him to fend for himself. When he couldn't find me, he came down just 5 minutes before the lift was going to close. As we were going up to the lift, we both talked about our struggles and our adventures, how it could have ended up so much worse, and all for a measly $11. It was getting late, and I decided I would put another layer on. I reached into my left pocket, where I felt a piece of paper. I pulled out my long-lost $11. May have seemed like we would have laughed after that, but I think we were both closer on the scale to crying. Somehow, Colton and I are still very good friends. I guess if somebody will go to those lengths to help you out, they're worth keeping around.
This next story involves another adventure here in the Roaring Fork Valley, the Haunted Mine Drop in the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. Eva Marie is here to tell you exactly what it is like to go on this ride, even when you're afraid of the dark.
3 years ago, the Caverns Mine Drop opened. I was 9 years old at the time, meaning I was overdramatic at times, and I also had a massive fear of the dark. When I heard that the Caverns Mine Drop was open, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to feel the rush of wind on my face and the adrenaline rush in my whole body. So my family and I made plans to go over summer break. My grandparents and uncle and my cousins came too. It was a hot day with not a cloud in sight. We started with some less intense ride first, like the roller coaster and the giant swing, to get ourselves warmed up. And then came the mine drop. I had no clue what to expect, but as I was waiting in line, I heard the screams of other people as they went down, and that got me a little nervous. The smell was overwhelming. It was a mix of dust and metal. It burned my nose, and it lingered around my family for a while. When it was my turn, I had to take off my shoes and backpack and put them in a little pouch. I wondered if the ride was so intense that my shoes would fly right off if I kept them on. My brother was rambling on and on about the speed and height and the width of the ride. We sat down on the warm leather seats, and I was sitting next to my cousin and two other random teenage girls who were talking about how nervous they were. Now, the first thing that set me off was the video that played. It was a little minor ghost, and at first it wasn't too terrible, but then the ghost turned into a devil and threatened to keep us at the bottom. We suddenly dropped so fast, and I grabbed the sides holding on for dear life. My stomach was up in my throat, and I could barely breathe. It was basically like we were free falling out of the sky. We reach the bottom, and I start sobbing because I can't see anything, and I thought there was something in front of me. My cousin grabbed my hand, and one of the teenagers I was sitting next to grabbed my other hand. I looked up and saw the lights turning on, and the ride slowly started to bring us back up. I start to calm down a bit, but then I remember there are people at the top waiting for us, so then I became embarrassed. My cheeks were still stained with tears when my dad asked me if I wanted to go again. I said, "No way." I wait outside the ride for my family, and we ride a couple other rides, and we go home. Fast forward to a couple weeks later, I was still thinking about the mine drop and how scary it was. It made me nervous, but I decided I wanted to ride it again. My sister was like, really? I said, this time I know what's coming, so I will be fine. Sometimes it takes a little time to adjust, but now I know that I can face anything.
Now that we are deep into 2020 holiday season, Andy decided to tell you a story about his family's faithful attempt to cut down their own Christmas tree.
I set off on my annual treacherous expedition to find a Christmas tree. My family and I tramped through the woods, knee-deep in snow. We wanted to find the perfect tree this year, since last year we found a dilapidated Charlie Brown tree. After a few hours of searching through the snow, we eventually found one that perfectly fit our house. 8 feet tall with one flat side so we could put it against the wall. When we arrived back at the truck, my parents hauled it onto the roof. The straps were in the back of the truck and we'd have to move some things around to get to them, but my dad decided to be lazy and use the rope that was easily accessible in the back seat. Except that clearly it was rotting. The funny thing is that my dad was not even in the same car as us. He had ridden with friends who had been tree cutting as well. For a few miles, we rode down the highway with the tree strapped to the roof by rotten cords. It wasn't an ideal situation, but we knew it would be okay. As we were headed down Highway 82, there was a small rumbling above us. That rumbling started low and then got louder and louder. Finally, there was a loud thunk. That's when we all knew something was wrong. As my mom started to pull over, we immediately stopped our chit-chat and looked around to the back of the car and saw that the tree was on the highway behind us. Once we pulled the car over, I opened the door and stepped out. As we looked back on the highway, with cars zooming around, we saw the tree lying there, smack dab in the middle of the lane. Cars were swerving to dodge it, and we had to make a plan to retrieve it from the middle of the road. We watched my mom running back to get it, dodging cars and dragging the broken, less than perfect tree across the pavement. It was way further back than we thought. As we got it strapped to the roof again, this time with the real straps, and drove off. We called my dad to see where he was, and found out that he was relaxing and having a good time. Now we know that sometimes a little more effort can go a long way.
Another classic story for the Christmas season is The Nutcracker. Even though it is filled with magic at every turn, there are some dark and scary moments. Here to tell you what it's like to overcome her fears is Emery.
When I was little, maybe in kindergarten, I watched The Nutcracker with my family. It was a typical movie night. You could smell the popcorn in the microwave, the pop-popping noise that it made. My brother and I were dreaming of stuffing our faces as we counted down the seconds right in front of the microwave. Our mouths were watering, just waiting for the popcorn. Once the timer went off, my brother pushed me to the bone-chilling tile floor. He grabbed the popcorn and left. He didn't even mind helping me up. My bare feet were frozen on the tile floor. My mom calls me and says, "Emery, the movie's starting." I start running into the living room. The room is dark, and my mom and brother were fighting over the popcorn. Then there was a white flash on the TV. Everyone goes quiet for a second. Me and my dad shush my mom and brother. We start watching the movie. At first, it's a nice Christmas movie scene with kids playing and getting ready for Santa to come and bring presents. But maybe 10 minutes into the movie, these rats come into the little girl's dark room at night. The rats had gross yellow teeth, brown, greasy hair, and bright red eyes. I freaked out. I started screaming and crying. I didn't know how the rest of my family was so calm. I ran around the couch. I sprinted to my room, slammed the door shut. I dove into my bed. I cried into my pillow so hard it was like a lake on my bed. That night, I had nightmares about rats coming into my room with their tiny, pointy, shiny spears and pitchforks, led by their king, who wore a mini cheese crown in my dream. It started becoming a yearly dream. Every time, it's just as bad. Every time I wake up startled and so afraid to even put my feet on the floor, I try to think about happy thoughts like soft blue cotton candy and a river of flowers. Eventually, every night I fall asleep and wake up with my hair in a bird's nest every single year. But a couple of years ago in fifth grade, my brother was so fed up with my fear that he marched me down to Petco. He pulled me over to the rodent section and I almost screamed. He was taking me to the rats. He pushed me up against the glass and told me to open my eyes. When he finally got me to open my eyes, my eyes almost started to water. But then the rat squeaked and smiled. And that made me realize that the producers of Nutcracker had over-exaggerated them a lot. Now my fears of rats have become not as bad. I don't have nightmares anymore, but if I see one in the streets and not in a pet store, I'll still get a little freaked out. Nonetheless, I've gotten better. I have my brother to thank for that, pushing me to face my fears, literally.
And finally, here's Enoch's story. When COVID-19 was first rearing its ugly head here in the United States, Enoch was on his way to an important retreat, a retreat that taught him some important lessons about doing what's right and helped him navigate the last few months of the pandemic.
Back in March, before COVID, my family and I were in Denver so I could participate in the Landmark Forum. It's sort of a self-help therapeutic retreat packed into one weekend. Now on our way there, it was just my dad and me. It was dark, and at about 8 p.m., we had to stop to get gas at a station whose store had closed. They had the lights off, just like most of the buildings around it. This was before the whole mass shutdown thing, so we weren't super worried. We were here traveling like it was business as usual. And when we were staying in Denver, we stayed at my dad's cousin Caesar's house. And for the next 3 days, we sat with Caesar and his two sons. When we saw his eldest, also named Caesar, his school had closed due to COVID concerns. He said he got ready for school and was told it was just shut down through an email. When hearing that his school would be shut down, I knew mine would be too. While at Landmark, the staff was well aware of COVID and did everything in their power to ease our parents' minds. They wiped down the microphones between each person speaking, told us to wash our hands before lunch, didn't let us use bare hands to serve ourselves, and use hand sanitizer before and after breaks. I thought it was a little overkill at the time, but there was so much we still didn't know. We did everything good to keep each other safe, besides masks and social distancing. Now, something about the Landmark Forum is that it is very harsh. It'll tell you things that you've buried deep inside you for the purpose of letting you know who you are. They dig up buried secrets and to show you why you shouldn't treat yourself to be a victim, but instead why you're running a racket and treating things as they're not. I thought I went there to fix my lying problem, but after I realized I can't fix my problem, but to create a new possibility for myself and my life that doesn't include lying. I was also dealing good with the problem on which one of my parents I wanted to live with. One side was easy. I would have everything I wanted, but would never live up to my true potential. On the other side, I could be who I wanted, but had to give up a few privileges to make up for my misdeeds. Landmark helped me see who I am, and in doing so, let me see that it wasn't a choice, but a matter of easy and right. Flash forward to mid-November, when it was just 2 weeks before Thanksgiving break. Our school reportedly had a COVID exposure, and we were to go home after the break, except for me. I was to stay at home so we could reduce our contact, as we knew who was so many here that were at risk. I hated online school and still do. Then I remembered, by complaining about being online and pestering my mom about when I could go back, soon, proof showed that being selfish and making about me would have been the wrong move, as I tested positive in early December. I'm glad I made the decision that was right instead of the one that was easy and running a racket.
Thanks for listening to this month's holiday show from the Andy Zanka Youth News team, where each member of the team has put together a story that they wanted to share with the community. I'm Mountain Maze. We will see you next year.